The discussion today is about socialists and the same-sex marriage campaign. We're going to be first hearing from Liam Byrne. Liam was the 2009 National Queer Officer for the National Union of Students. In 2010, he's moved on to bigger and better things and is now the State Queer Officer here in Victoria for the National Union of Students, and has also been centrally involved in Equal Love, which is the Melbourne organisation for the same-sex marriage campaign. He's been involved in that for some years now. He's also been a member of Socialist Alternative for
a while.
Many happy years. And is a member of the Thursday branch here in Melbourne. So I'll hand over to Liam to begin with.
All right, thanks, Elise. Well, I'm going to just pass around some paraphernalia, news clipping, stuff like that from the LGBTI press, particularly from here in Melbourne, which was thankfully donated to me by James, who's over there. There's also some other things in there. So I highly encourage that people hand them back afterwards. I know you may be interested in coming to the August 1 demonstration in 2009, but unfortunately that's not possible any longer, so please keep all of those things going around, but bring them back at the end. So I wanted to start with a quote which people may have seen recently. It's vaguely lengthy, but, well, tough. So it begins like this. As I hover outside the registry office at Ian and Nick's civil partnership, I'm struck by how normal it all feels. A legal ceremony bringing together two people who love each other. Two people who just happen to be same-sex. And it seems crazy to me that this still threatens people so much. Inside, the celebrant conducts the service with humour, and as at the best weddings, we laugh and we cry. But what strikes me most as I listen, what really hits home, is that this is a legal process. And for the first time, I see the whole issue of gay marriage with a blinding clarity. The overriding feeling in the room is respect for Ian and Nick and for their relationship. Our being in this room says that their relationship is as good, bad, or indifferent as yours. And it says that they are as good, bad, or indifferent as you. They are the same. I am the same. I am no less than you because I am gay. When Sarah and I returned from Canada after getting married, we were unsure of our legal status here and decided to test it out in a family court. It was this process that led to the Howard government in changing the law to specifically exclude us. That message sent a clear and opposite message. It said, your relationship is not the same as mine. You are not the same as me. You are less than me because you are gay. It is time for that to change. And that was written by Jacqueline Tomlins in the Sunday Age on March 28 this year. And I think it was in the Sydney Morning Herald as well for people who are up there. Now, I wanted to start with that for a number of reasons, that particular quote. I think, firstly, it shows a lot of the emotional core of the issue of same-sex marriage rights for a whole range of people. You know, just absolute repugnance that two mothers or two fathers or any two people of the same sex, for that matter, cannot enjoy the same symbolic rights as straight people. The straight people who live on their street, the straight people who they work with, the straight people whose kids go to the same school as theirs potentially, and the people who have read their plight in the newspaper. But I think it also shows a real pertinent point about why the issue of same-sex marriage has gained such widespread support and why it's such a key issue within the lesbian and gay transgender community. And indeed, why it's such a big issue amongst all sections of the community. Which is actually a marked difference to just a few years ago, where it was a demand that was predominantly associated with more middle-aged, professional, yuppie, aspirationalist sections of the LGBTI community. But now it's a demand that really is embraced by basically the entirety of the LGBTI community, which can be seen at any of the Equal Love demonstrations, which I've helped to organise and been involved in, and I'm sure demonstrations elsewhere, where really if you take a snapshot of who's actually at the demonstrations, it's younger people, older people, trans people, lesbian and gay people, people from different, all walks of life really, who are part of the LGBTI community, and also people who are not part of the LGBTI community who want to demand this. And it's also evidenced in a study that came out last year. It was conducted by the University of Queensland, which is called Not So Private Life Study, which found that 86.3% of gays and lesbians wanted the right to get married, though interestingly enough, only about 50% stated that they actually wish to get married, so they actually want the right but don't have any intentions themselves of getting married, which shows the sort of like the civil rights aspect of the demand. And I said outside the LGBTI community there is also a huge amount of support. Galaxy poll conducted in 2009, just before the major demonstrations last year, found that 60% of the public support same-sex marriage. There was a majority of support in every single state and territory. This is the first time that's happened. And amongst young people, the support for same-sex marriage rights was as high as 74%. The only age category that didn't have a majority support for same-sex marriage was people over 50, and even here, 45% of them do support same-sex marriage rights. And it's worth slipping in just as a bit of trivia, although I'm fairly sure next time I play Trivial Pursuit this question won't come up, which is a bit of a shame, is that there are actually more people who say they strongly agree with same-sex marriage, 27%, than there are people who say they strongly disagree, which is around 20%. Yet, of course, despite this, we still have the Rudd government maintaining the ban on same-sex marriage. So just a wee bit of history of the campaign, which is sort of aspects I'm going to give, and then Heidi's going to speak more about some of the particular arguments that socialists have been making. And now this history lesson is going to require using some mysterious people back from the depths of the dawn of time, pretty much is what it feels like today, characters such as John Howard. People remember John Howard? I find it kind of hard these days. Okay, awesome. Well, the ban on same-sex marriage was implemented in Australia in 2004, August of that year, when the Marriage Act was changed by the then Howard government to explicitly state that marriage can only be between a man and a woman. And this was, of course, supported by the Australian Labor Party. So this doesn't mean that same-sex marriage was legal in Australia. It wasn't. But the banning or the extra banning or the hyper banning of same-sex marriage was ostensibly to tighten up any of the ambiguities that existed. So as the quote I began with sort of says, that there was no real sort of understanding about where legally people who'd been married overseas would fit in when they came back to Australia and what recognition of rights or otherwise would be. So to ban on same-sex marriage was to totally exclude their recognition of their marriages. But a second reason for the banning, which I believe to actually be a more determining one, was a far more cynical manoeuvre. You know, in Australia, there's been a long history of the capitalist class using homophobia and having an oppression to maintain it. So in no way was bringing in the ban going against a broad project that's always existed in Australia of homophobic oppression. And the actions of the Howard government and the Labor opposition at that time definitely fitted this broader pattern of homophobia in Australia, but with an absolute dose of opportunism mixed in. So I don't think it's any coincidence that it was brought up in August 2004. This was a federal election year. It was also a period of time when Howard was quite unpopular due to the wars in Iraq, which had seen some of the biggest demonstrations in human history and Australian history against those wars, hated for his racism towards refugees and Indigenous people amongst a whole section of society, and for a whole other raft of reasons was hated. So the sort of cynical manoeuvring where he was trying to find a scapegoat, trying to find people to beat over the head, was definitely something that I think was quite cynically done by him and, of course, supported by the Labor Party, then under the so-called left-wing Mark Latham, who was more than happy to similarly beat up scapegoats and do whatever they need to do to appeal to the bigots in society to try and get elected, which is actually quite similar to what was happening in the 2004 American elections where George Bush and Republicans used quite a similar process to try and maintain some cohesion of their electoral base and to try and win some people over to vote for them. And it is worth saying that at this time, people who supported same-sex marriage were actually a minority. It was nowhere near 60%. It is today. It was about 36%. And I remember I was, just on a more personal note, I was doing Year 12 at that time, so I was still in high school. And it really was when the ban came through, when there were all these debates, when you hear John Howard and other people talking about how unequal we are, how we don't deserving these rights, all these sort of things. It really was a great big green light to all the bigots out there, and even just where I was in a totally localised sort of sense, you could really get that idea of being under attack in terms of who you were and all this sort of stuff. It's the way this state-sanctioned homophobia, what they talk about at the top, really filters through down below. So the campaign for same-sex marriage, particularly in Victoria under the guise of Equal Love, has been around since 2005. Now, there's been other groups that campaign for same-sex marriage, notably Australian Marriage Equality, but these groups, they don't typically have the same orientation that Equal Love has of grassroots mobilisations, of demonstrations, things like that. It's far more a sort of look towards lobbying and, you know, sort of appealing to the parliamentarians and things like this. So Equal Love, as I said, started in 2005, and it was a campaign group that was largely connected to the Victorian Gay and Lesbian Rights Lobby in sort of regards that it was sort of, they gave us the general sort of framework to work in, but we were pretty much doing whatever we wanted and autonomous from them because they're far more conservative sort of community lobby group. And between 2005 and 2008, the main strategy of Equal Love was to have demonstrations, particularly in August every year, maybe one or two others, which tended to be a bit of a moralistic vigil, marking the denial of equal rights that usually concluded in form of mass civil ceremony. The demonstrations usually mobilised people in roughly the hundreds and could be quite dreary affairs at times, at least that's how I remember a lot of them. And they were largely organised by more slightly more right-wing, middle-class LGBTI people who I mentioned before. Now, Socialist Alternative, of course, have opposed the ban on same-sex marriage and opposed the state-sanctioned homophobia, not because we believe that marriage is a fantastic social institution which everybody should aspire to and is sort of that underpins society and we think that's fantastic and all these sort of things, but rather in recognition that the motivation of the Howards and the Lathams of this world, this sort of Sauron and Saruman's of homophobia in Australia at that time. I always like a good Lord of the Rings reference. I was like, but their motivations was one that was fundamentally homophobic, and we support campaigns which actually undermine homophobia and give the oppressed an opportunity to fight against their oppression and hopefully, if they win that demand, to continue to fight on other issues that concern their rights. So, yeah, we've participated in the demonstrations, promoted them, gone along to them since 2005. But particularly around the last couple of years, since 2008, Socialist Alternative have become a lot more prominent in the campaign, particularly with the election of James Vigas, comrade sitting over here, who's the current co-convener of Equal Love, when he was elected to the National Queer Office of the National Union Students in 2008 and helped to organise a number of rallies, demonstrations, speak-outs, all these sort of things. And also with the help of other Socialist Alternative comrades and campaigners for equal rights, collected 30,000 signatures on a petition for equal rights, which I'll get back to later. And in 2009, Heidi and myself, after being elected to the National Union Students, continued the tradition that James started in his participation. And in 2009, I was also invited to join the Equal Love Committee, which was particularly at that point organising a demonstration for August 2009. Now, 2009, I think, is worth talking about a wee bit because it was a particularly significant year for the campaign for same-sex marriage. And I think it was actually the most significant year so far up to this year, and we'll see what happens this year. So symbolically, it was quite important because it was actually the fifth year of the ban. Obviously, 2004 comes 5 years before 2009, for those of you who aren't good at maths. I spent a few hours in that calculation. But also, 2009 saw the largest mobilisations of people for same-sex marriage up to this point around this issue. So to give you a sense of this, during the August 1 National Day of Action, there's some leaflets and posters going around from that. You had 5,000 people who marched in Melbourne and protested in Melbourne, 1,500 in Sydney, 500 in Brisbane, and on top of this, there were also rallies in Canberra, Hobart, Adelaide, Lismore, and a whole range of other places. And it really eclipsed previous years' numbers for same-sex marriage rights. And as somebody who studies gay and lesbian history in Australia, I've roughly calculated that as a national mobilisation, this is actually the largest national mobilisation for LGBTI rights in Australia's history, which other key students of history can contest, but I'm quite happy to defend. Because I'm right. And the mass protests on August 1, which happened, really, I think, set the stage for the subsequent protests, which have happened, that have continued since then to mobilise people in the thousands, where previously, as I said, having people in the high hundreds was seen as a real success. And I think there are a number of reasons why in 2009 the campaign really kicked off a fair bit. And I think one fact that shouldn't be underestimated was the fact that Howard lost office, and not only lost office, but lost his own seat. Because Howard was really seen as such a trenchant reactionary and such a trenchant homophobe that many people, particularly in the sort of officialdom of the LGBTI community, believed it wasn't even possible to achieve the more limited civil union rights, let alone marriage. And just to give you a bit of a sense of this, I remember a protest I was at in 2006, and other comrades may have been there as well, when in the Australian Capital Territory they were attempting to bring in civil unions, which they've recently done, and the Howard government vetoed it, which they have a right to do in territories. And when I was there, the protests, like the main speeches and stuff from the people who'd organised it, and it was outside the Liberal Party headquarters in Melbourne, it wasn't so much about, you know, we hate homophobia and all this sort of thing, but it was more about we need to defend the rights of the Australian Capital Territory. And that was the whole thing about it. It was territory rights, not LGBTI rights, which I really think just sort of was a bit of a demonstration for a whole bunch of people, a lot of defensiveness that existed in the Howard era. So Howard being kicked out in such a, you know, I think, sublime fashion, at least for him going, rather than who came in, that was, I think that lays some of the groundwork for upcoming success, that there was more expectations about what could happen after Howard. And I think the other issue that really sort of ended up contributing was the real backfiring of the anti-discrimination changes that the Rudd government implemented, and I mean backfiring on them, not on us. So these were laws that took place, they were implemented between November of 2008 and the 1st of July 2009, and there's a whole bunch of them too, taxation, superannuation, things like this. But one of the ones that was particularly interesting and that got a lot of attention and there was a lot of criticism of in the LGBTI press was the changes to Centrelink, to social welfare. So from July 1st, same-sex couples basically were told they had to out themselves to Centrelink, and from now on they would be judged as couples and not as individuals. So because our relationships didn't used to be recognised, you would get the benefits of two individuals if you were relying upon social welfare, but under the new changes you'd get a far less amount, which would be because you're considered to be a couple, which really pissed people off, I think. Because it's quite a like Orwellian proposition that the government will acknowledge your relationship when they can take money from you, but they won't acknowledge it anywhere else. So I think anyone actually give you full equal rights. So the way I do it as a great Orwell fan is explain it as all relationships are equal, but some are more equal than other. And I think that's very much the way the Labor government sees it. And I think one of the things that, this actually helped the mobilisation in August 1. And I think also the other thing that particularly helped the August 1 demonstration was that it was a bit more clear politically than ones in the past have been in Equal Love. The first Equal Love meeting I went to, one of the people who'd been campaigning for a number of years, first thing that he said, his name was Tim Wright, and he was the convener at that time. First thing he said was, it is absolutely imperative that we don't say we want civil unions, we want marriage, we want marriage, we want marriage, and that'll be the demand. And it's also imperative that instead of having the demonstration on August 13 or 14, the weekend, which is a couple of weeks in where the demonstrations historically are, that we have it on the 1st of August, which significance of that was the final day of the Australian Labor Party's national conference, which was happening. So it's explicitly targeting the Labor Party and their sort of denial of equal rights. And I think a whole bunch of these sort of political things and also a number of events that led up to August 1 really set the stage for a large mobilisation. The Galaxy poll coming out, the debate within the Tasmanian State Labor Conference itself where they passed a motion supporting same-sex marriage, and also the fact that the Greens did put up a bill for same-sex marriage rights, which they put up alongside the 30,000 signatures that were collected in 2008, which I mentioned before. And I think all this together really gave it a bit of momentum. And the success of August 1, I think, really set the stage to prove that you could actually do more than just have one demonstration a year, but you could actually mobilise time and time again. And the argument that we as socialists made in the Equal Love campaign, that was taken up by the campaign more broadly, was that we should actually launch a year of action for 2010, which, of course, would coincide with the federal election that's happening this year. And as part of that, we had a demonstration on November 28, which was quite successful. From memory, it's about at least 2,000 people came to that demonstration in Melbourne. And a whole bunch of the events leading up to that, there was a Senate inquiry where, on the basis of the bill that Senator Hanson-Young from the Greens put up, they actually debated about same-sex marriage and then, surprise, surprise, said that, yeah, Australia's not quite ready for that. It's absolute shock that a government-dominated Senate inquiry would say things like this. But again, the fact that it was happening pretty much in the direct lead-up to the demonstration was the week before that the results were announced. And I'd like to say that we'd planned for that, but that was just more a happy coincidence. So that was a fantastic thing in terms of mobilising, and we proved again that you could actually bring people out around this demand to launch a year of action. And one of the things that I found really good in that, it speaks a lot about the sort of purchase of this demand and what can happen in the campaign, was that we did a whole bunch of different things in terms of activism, in terms of putting up the posters, having speak outs, information stalls. We did all the usual things, but we also started to do stuff like we'd go into the gay and lesbian nightclubs and start to leaflet. I remember a number of times when I was doing this, I'd ask people if they'd heard about the demonstration and say, yeah, of course I've heard about it. So I'd be like, oh, okay, great, where have you heard about it from? And the answer would be, oh, it's just general knowledge. So the idea has just been everywhere, everywhere, everywhere that people have been talking about this demand. And this has been backed up by a demonstration that we had at the beginning of this year, which is happened on March 13th. It's not happening anymore. Sorry about that. Which in Melbourne, at least, it was a statewide demonstration, mobilised at least 1,500 people, possibly 2,000. Which again was a good mobilisation when you think that it wasn't linked into a traditional day of mobilisation. And actually this time a whole bunch of what I'd term the LGBTI bureaucracy, the sort of leaders of the different community groups and stuff like that, weren't exactly pushing the demonstration as they have in the past. But despite that, we still managed to mobilise large amounts of people. And interestingly enough, for anybody who was there, a huge amount of people who actually came from high schools as well, which really sort of shows, as I was saying with my example, the way state-sanctioned homophobia becomes a real symbolic example about all the homophobia you suffer in life, and high school students are just likely to be a bit more pissed off and willing to do things, is the experience that we've had, which was really fantastic. So just in terms of maybe a couple of things about where the campaign's going from here, I don't know if I can...
Keep it brief.
keep it brief.
1 minute.
1 minute, Jesus Christ. So it's going to be a short campaign because we're going to win, because I only have 1 minute to explain it. But basically, there's an idea that comes up in the LGBTI community and more broadly, that is basically it's just a matter of time, that eventually if we just, you know, hope a little bit, if we hope beyond hope, if we vote right in again, then eventually that we will get same-sex marriage because the tide of history is swinging towards it. But just a few weeks ago, in the when the same-sex marriage bill was put up in the Senate, and Heidi will speak more about the sort of politics around that, the Labor government, while many of the Labor left people actually refused to show up because they knew that the vote would go against it and they didn't want to make a debate about it, they didn't want to attack the party line, they were more than happy to allow the ban to be maintained. The Labor government did vote down the same-sex marriage bill, which is the first time it's done that, you know, officially voting it down as the government. So I think what it really shows is that the government is maintaining this homophobia, that it has an interest in maintaining this bigotry, that particularly coming up to an electoral year. They don't want to make an issue out of this, and so the responsibility to make an issue out of this falls upon us. It falls upon Equal Love and it falls upon socialists who actually don't think the change comes from voting in you know, Sauron or Saruman or whatever it may be, that there are no Gandalfs when it comes to, you know, parliamentary politics, and there never have been. But actually, it matters about our action is the sort of thing that really matters. And actually, what we do in the Year of Action in terms of building the upcoming demonstrations, such as the one on May 15, which is the National Day of Action, that's going to be the thing that builds momentum that can make this into an issue. And it's only through continuing this process, continuing to mobilise, making an issue out of it, giving, in the words of Harvey Milk, giving people hope that they actually can do something, that that will be the road forward, not relying upon Lord of the Rings-esque comparisons, figures and all those sort of things. So it's our action that matters, which is really the strategy of Equal Love that I think is the thing that's going to determine the success or failure of this campaign in the coming years. And I think we do have to be prepared that while we could win it, that it could actually be quite a long, bitter struggle.
Well, our next speaker is Heidi. Heidi was the 2009 Queer Officer for the National Union of Students. She's involved in Sydney with the group Community Action Against Homophobia, which has been spearheading the campaign for same-sex marriage rights. She's also been a long-standing member of Socialist Alternative, both in Melbourne and for the last few years in the Sydney branch. So she's going to talk about some of the debates that have come up in the campaign for same-sex marriage rights.
Well, as Liam's shown, we've seen how the campaign has grown since the ban was placed in 2004. And it's true that today, at least in 2010, same-sex marriage rights is definitely, you know, supported by the majority. But this wasn't axiomatic. In fact, there had to be a serious argument waged even to have this campaign for equal rights. And some were arguing that it was not a demand, marriage was not a demand that we should be fighting for. And as explained in the letters section of Socialist Alternative, I was going through my archive recently, at the first National Day of Action for Same-Sex Marriage Rights on 13th of August 2005, which was the first anniversary of the ban, a group of pseudo-leftists by the name of Gingham Menace protested against same-sex marriage, calling out things like, "I'm not for subscribing to a nuclear family," and staging a same-sex wedding only to throw eggs at it. All the while, people were speaking and performing. People at the demo found it frustrating and confusing. Well, the Gingham Menace argued that they had concerns with the state of the campaign and with its orientation towards marriage as a progressive step in the fight for queer liberation. "Our position is carefully thought out," they claimed. "Despite the anti-Howard rhetoric, we believe that the marriage campaign plays right into his social agenda." Well, the Gingham Menace thankfully has died out, but unfortunately these arguments are still around, particularly in the ranks of the student queer collectives. Now, these so-called leftists couch their opposition to same-sex marriage in militant-sounding phrases, and they seek to position themselves as radicals who are intransigently opposed to conservative institutions like marriage and heteronormativity. Their arguments go something like, "We don't want to fight to be included in these heterosexist institutions. We want to smash them up instead." Well, I think they need to be exposed for the bullshit phrase-mongers that they are. As we have argued in our magazine, the ban on same-sex marriage was not introduced to protect lesbians and gays from the institution of marriage. It was designed to discriminate against lesbian and gay people. It was designed to send an explicit message to all the homophobes out there that it's okay to discriminate. It's okay to be homophobic, and lesbians and gays are second-class citizens. Now, in this context, the idea that you need to oppose the same-sex marriage, the need that to be radical is to oppose the campaign against same-sex marriage. Well, this is quite laughable. Actually, no, it's totally reprehensible, because these so-called leftists are the ones who are lining up with the John Howards, the Kevin Rudds, and the George Pells of the world. Now, these pseudo-leftists might not like the idea that there are same-sex families, but they do exist, and the problem is that they are classed as being second class, which means they have fewer rights than heterosexual families, and that lesbian and gay relationships are regarded as second class. Now, what the campaign is arguing for is the civil right to marry. Not all LGBTI people who are fighting for this civil right actually want to, you know, take it up, but that is not the point. Opposing us fighting for this civil right is actually to line up with the bigots. And anyone today who considers themselves to be left-wing or radical has to clarify their position on the campaign. And this shouldn't be based on whether they themselves want to marry, but on the key political question. Do they support or oppose the government discriminating against a section of the population? Everything else is just a distraction. But even more than having the wrong political position, by opposing same-sex marriage, these so-called radicals are actually abstaining from a genuine campaign, a campaign that has the ability to push back the right-wing agenda of the Rudd government. But the ultra-lefts are not the only sources of criticism or abstention. Others around the campaign or around society don't want to rock the boat for the Labor Party. When Rudd got elected, and even beforehand, it was clear that they were not going to be delivering on so many of the demands that were being placed on them by a public that was sick to death of Howard's attacks on workers, on immigrants, on Indigenous rights, and on the LGBTI people. Organisations like the Gay and Lesbian Rights Lobby, called GLRL, many of whom are actually in the Australian Labor Party, the AIDS Council of New South Wales, ACON, which is funded by the government, and of course the most left, the Labor left students on the campuses, they were all more than happy to come along to the demonstrations and stand up and demand equality when Howard was in government. But since Labor has gotten into power, these groups have had to be dragged kicking and screaming along to the demonstrations, if they come at all, and they certainly have not done anything to build the demonstrations. Now, the out lesbian Labor Senator Penny Wong sums it up when she says that her position is that of the Labor Party, and that is the position of the Australian people, that marriage is between a man and a woman. Well, for a start, she's wrong, because as we already know, the position of the Australian people are in 60% in support of same-sex marriage. But factual errors aside, Wong's position is that of the party with which she's been elected to Parliament. And despite it being against her own personal interests, Wong is not prepared to stand up to the bigots in Parliament or to rock the boat for the ALP. She wants to stay in power, and this means doing the bidding of the people who actually pull the strings in the government, the Australian bosses, the ruling class. Now, this is why we can't rely on the Labor Party, or for that matter the Greens, to bring the change that we want. And in fact, those that look to the parliamentary strategies to win reforms, actually, they have the worst strategies for trying to win them. And I wanted to tell you a bit about what the Gay and Lesbian Rights Lobby is, their position on the marriage campaign at the moment. And this is recently come to light. They've done it again, for those of us in Sydney. The GLRL are saying, we recognise that if we want to push Rudd now to make an election promise for marriage equality, he will most likely say no. Therefore, not wanting the government to commit to maintaining the status quo, we have decided it is not strategic to plan to make marriage equality an election issue at the upcoming federal election by publicly calling for such a commitment. That said, we believe that now is a good time to build community support and activism for marriage equality. If we are able to increase community support for marriage equality now, we will be able to utilise this support to put pressure on the government for reform at a later, deliberately chosen date. And let me tell you, the GLRL have got form on this kind of thing just before an election. So their strategy is, don't ask for marriage equality, but build activism and community support for a demand that we're not going to ask for. So I think this really shows the bankruptcy of reformism. But actually, the campaign, for whatever reasons, has actually been able to win some concessions from the Labor Party, which raised the question, should we just accept the government's positive changes to the 85 areas of law that actually do remove quite a lot of the discrimination, at least in legal cases, against same-sex couples, and just forget about marriage? Is that what we should do? Well, after all, the law changes do mean that same-sex couples are almost legally the same as married couples. And, of course, that is the problem. Almost equal is not equal. Or 85% equal is not equal. And that's why the current Wear It With Pride campaign that's designed to promote these law changes among the LGBTI community is so vexing. Now, ACON, the AIDS Council, have been given tens of thousands of dollars, I'm sure, to run a pro-government campaign to promote these 85 law changes. And it's all about Rudd trying to curry favour with young people, with supporters of gay rights and the right wing at the same time. The government is determined to convince us that we should be satisfied with the 85 laws and stop asking for more! So, the contradiction in this was made really clear to me when I asked Corey Earlam, who is the person employed by ACON, to run the 85 Laws campaign or the Wear It With Pride campaign. I was asking Corey Earlam if he could give us the phone numbers of some of the celebrities that were involved in the Wear It With Pride campaign so that we could get them to come and speak at our March 20 demonstration that we had recently. And Corey said, oh yes, I'd be glad to give them to you after the federal election. Because to do so beforehand would be a conflict of interest. Too right, too right. Because the Wear It With Pride campaign is about, you know, praising the government for the crumbs that they've thrown us. Whereas the Marriage Equality campaign is actually about demanding full equality. We don't need to have a campaign to tell the government what a great job they're doing giving us partial equality. We actually need to be escalating the fight for full marriage equality. We shouldn't accept these half measures. We have to demand that full equality now. Because if we could win on this front, it could actually open up the potential to feed into other campaigns, to stand up to other objectionable policies of the Rudd government, like the plans to build more uranium mines and toxic waste dumps on Aboriginal land, or to Labor's continued support for the US-led wars in the Middle East, or to Fair Work Australia, the Orwellian name for the Rudd government's new version of Howard's Work Choices that see Australian workers losing conditions and job security. Because there's always the possibility that the fight for reforms will connect with and spill over into broader struggles about all sorts of things. And this is already happening, as we've heard earlier, about the campaign that's going on in California and across the US with the movement against the budget cuts, particularly in education and in other social services, and the campaign around LGBTI rights that are intersecting. Because both campaigns are happening in the context of a really sharp class divide in the US, and the demands of both the campaigns are clearly class demands. On the one hand, you've got money for education, stop the school closures and the burgeoning class sizes, and then you've got healthcare and superannuation benefits for same-sex couples and removing discrimination in employment. Now, these are clearly class demands. And many of the activists that are involved in the LGBTI struggles are also involved in the campaigns around schools and public services. Okay, well, I've spoken a lot about the Labor Party in Australia, but many of the people involved in the same-sex marriage campaign actually don't have a lot of faith in Labor. In fact, they look more to the Greens as being a left-wing progressive alternative. Because, yes, the Greens do support the demand for marriage equality, but because of their parliamentary orientation, they simply will not mobilise or create any sort of political crisis for the government. Now, there are actually Greens candidates who are involved in the same-sex marriage campaign in Sydney. They come along to the meetings occasionally. But despite being asked several times, they refuse to even organise to have the National Year of Action or the demonstrations up on the Greens' many, many websites that they have. Not even one of them. They will, however, come along to the meetings in the lead-up to the demonstrations and argue to have Green speakers on the platforms, which we want to have because, you know, we want to broaden out the campaign. But even so, they've got their speakers on the platforms. They refuse to actually mobilise their support base, even to come along to the demonstrations. Because the Greens In fact, they're more inclined to do deals than to mobilise their supporters, as evidenced by the manoeuvring with the marriage equality bill that Liam mentioned earlier, which prompted the gay press headline in New South Wales, at least, Greens sell out. In that instance, they hadn't sold out so much as been completely ineffectual in their reading of the same-sex marriage bill in Parliament. But it was a sellout in Canberra on the question of legally binding ceremonies for same-sex couples. Their own press release, the Greens press release, was headed, "Political compromise delivers best possible outcome for ACT couples." Now, I'm not going to go into the ins and outs of what was going on, but according to the Equal Love Group in Canberra at the time, the amendments might seem innocuous, but they actually undermine the entire purpose of the new law. So basically, the Greens had just caved into the Labor Party and decided, oh, well, we can't actually get what we want, so we'll just have this, second-rate version. Now, if the Greens actually chose to mobilise their support base rather than grandstanding to an empty parliament, which they did with their marriage equality bill, it could make a real difference to the campaign, because the Greens have a large support base and a large following, and particularly among young people that are being so stirred up by this issue. But this isn't an oversight on the part of the Greens. The Greens are just not for mass action to bring about change. They are for Green MPs trying to make the change through negotiation and through asking nicely. And it's a dead-end strategy, as we've seen demonstrated time and time again by the Greens themselves. Well, thankfully, the same-sex marriage campaign has not waited for Labor or the Greens to deliver. It's not been deterred either by the radical-sounding left-faced opponents of the campaign. And it's been crucial then to have socialists in the campaign, arguing for a strategy that is not curtailed by a concern to go through the proper channels, advance someone's parliamentary career, or accept what is realistic. Having socialists arguing for demonstrations, calling on union support, drawing more and more organisations into the campaign has been key to pushing things forward. And it's the active on the ground campaigning that has been able to tap into the widespread but passive support and slowly trying to build up a campaign that actually can't be ignored by the government. And that's why broader politics are so important. More socialists make a difference because we don't accept the limits or the half measures placed on us by the system or those trying to run the system and those who say that they're on our side. Socialists want to smash the system and the oppression that is necessary for the system to continue. And because we know which side we're on, we look to our own side to fight the battles. We don't rely on Labor or the Greens or the lobbyists or the law courts. We rely on mobilising the workers, the students and the oppressed, who have no interest in maintaining the capitalist system that breeds homophobia and inequality. The campaign for same-sex marriage shows that why you need to have a worldview, in fact a class view, and even half an idea of how change comes about in order to effectively fight even for these small reforms. The strategies of the reformists, well, they can't even win these reforms. And the ultra-lefts, well, they miss the point completely. But if you have it in your mind that you want to get rid of capitalism, and you see that it's capitalism that breeds homophobia, and you know that capitalism can't deliver on the reforms that we actually want, then you're not prepared to wait around for the crumbs. You know that you have to fight. And of course, we all know if you don't fight, you will lose.